This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. I'm Jenny Nyman, and this is the Kenai Conversation. This week, we've got the four candidates for Homer Electric Association's Board of Directors, District 1 and 2 seats. Voting opens April 3rd and closes May 7th. Cooperative members can vote online, via paper ballot, or in person at HEA's annual meeting, May 7th. First up, we'll hear from the two candidates for the District 1 seat, incumbent Jim Duffield and challenger Patrick Parker. The District 1 seat covers Kenai, Nikiski, and parts of Soldotna.
We will start with opening statements. Jim, why don't you go ahead with that whenever you're ready?
Okay. Well, I'm Jim Duffield. I live in Kenai. I have lived in Alaska for 25 years. I've been on the Homer Electric Board for two three-year terms, so 6 years. This, if I'm reelected, would be my third and final term. And we've accomplished a lot of good things while I've been on the board. We got through the Green New Scam without making any bad decisions or bad deals. And we have a really good, solid board, and I'd like to have one more term to help make sure that we get everything moving forward the way it's good for the community and for the members.
All right. Patrick, how about you?
Yeah, so my name is Patrick Parker. I grew up here on the peninsula. I've been here for over 30 years, my whole life. And I worked in the local electrical field out of high school, and then I kind of migrated into the oil field. And then since then, I've transitioned into as a software engineer. I've worked for the school district. And I've always just kind of been interested in energy and electricity and how it all works. And I'm kind of guy who has a lot of different projects going on in my garage with wires and connectors, and it's fun stuff. I enjoy it a lot. So being a member of the HEA board, something I'm interested in because it's a way that I could use my my skills to give back to the community. So I've always kind of felt like looked for ways to be more involved in the community and participate. And this really is kind of the perfect fit for me because I think I have a pretty unique perspective. So that's why I'm interested in running and I'm hoping to make a big impact.
First question, Patrick, we'll start with you on this one. Can you talk a little about what you see as the function of the HEA board? What do you see as your role as a director on the HEA board? What purpose do you think the board serves?
Yeah, I think that the HEA board member's primary responsibility is to represent the members that elected them. So I think it's important to be transparent and communicative with those members about what's going on with HEA, because it's not just members communicating to HEA what we want through the board member, but it's also HEA communicating to the members through the board member. So I think that it's kind of a two-way street. I think it's important to solicit feedback from members and while also, being transparent and giving information to the members and really just do what's in the best interest for the utility and not really any other cause, just focusing on our community and our utility and ratepayers.
Jim, same question to you. Can you talk a little about the function of the HEA board? What do you see as your role as director?
Yeah, so the board of directors' responsibilities, oversight, guidance, strategic planning, and informed consent. Management's responsible for the daily operations and personnel management, regulatory compliance, reporting, and strategic planning. So the overlap between the two is the strategic planning part. The board of directors and management have to work together on those plans. And then once the management says, we think that's really good, and the board agrees, then they'll approve it. And it's up to management to put the plans into place and the board of directors to monitor it and provide oversight and guidance to achieve the objectives. And I think we've got an excellent board. We've had an excellent board for a while now, and we've done exactly that. We've actually lowered the rates a couple of times, only slightly, But I think we've done a really good job in holding the cost of utility down.
Next question, Jim, we'll start with you on this one. Thinking about long-term vision and sustainability for the utility, how do you think HEA's board is doing right now? Do you think the board is on the right track?
Oh, absolutely. Like I think I mentioned earlier, we made our way through the Green New Scam. Because powering our utility with fairy dust and unicorn farts is not going to work. So windmills and solar just don't work here. In villages, they're a great idea because those people are captive to diesel fuel and that price is astronomical. And those things will work great out in those places, but not on a utility of this size. And especially in our region, it won't work very well. The best place for windmills was right across from Homer on that big mountainside over there where the glaciers are at. All the testing showed, hey, let's put them right there. I'm like, well, if you want to put them there, okay. But a lot of people didn't like that. I mean, I don't like it either. But we've discussed and had opportunities, a number of projects. We signed with some IPPs, and they were never able to produce and get what they wanted to be. My big source for the future and where I really pushed was hydro and geothermal. We have resources that'll last a minimum of 100 years, and those are enough to produce power for the entire Rail Belt utility. But they're very costly and very long term to get there. We've put ourselves in a position that when the pipeline comes in, the price of our fuel will drop by half, more than half. And I think we're in a good place right now. Thank you.
Patrick, same question to you. Thinking about long-term vision and sustainability for the utility, how do you think HEA's board is doing right now? Do you think the board is on the right track?
Yeah, so I think that we could be further along in the process of diversifying our grid. I think that our energy diversification has been largely the same over the last 30 years-ish, if not longer, around 30 years. So personally, I think that we could be doing more to get new energy sources added into our grid so that we have not so much of a reliance on gas. Gas is always going to play a super important part of the energy puzzle in our area, both in electrical energy, but also, it's what most of the peninsula uses to heat their homes and businesses. So I think gas is really important, but I think that it's a little bit of a waste to be using so much of it for electrical energy when we have a lot of other energy sources available. There's lots of proven examples of successful alternative energy programs in Alaska, and I think that we can apply those here locally to diversify the grid and move us a little bit more towards stable energy costs that aren't fluctuating with the price of gas.
Renewables. The HEA board has gone back and forth about the extent to which renewables target should be included in a concrete plan. How big of a role should renewables be playing when you think about the long-term sustainability of the utility?
Yeah, so that's a great question. The reality is that if we want stable costs in the grid that are predictable, renewables are a very good way to do that. And it sounds counterintuitive because a lot of people think that renewables are not stable, but the fact is that they generate a known amount of energy, and the costs for that energy is zero, or next to zero. So, the cost for implementing the project in the beginning is obviously much higher than a lot of other projects, but the actual fuel to generate the energy is non-existent. It's a fuelless resource, and so I think it plays a really important part in the diversification of our grid to lead to more stable costs, whereas any fuels-based energy production has variability in it, with the cost of the fuel going up and down. The cost of solar energy doesn't change. And so I think that's something that we should be really heavily vested in and moving forward with in our grid. And we're seeing it all over in the world, and it's working really well. So that's something that I think that we should definitely be pushing hard for.
So, Jim, same question to you. How big of a role should renewables be playing when you think about the long-term sustainability of the utility?
With the advent of the Dixon diversion over into Bradley Lake, and we had another resource going into Bradley Lake that we just initiated about a year or so ago. Our take on that, HEAs, is 12%. So we've already got a minimum of 12% coming out of there as far as our renewables go. And once the Dixon diversion is done, they're going to increase the height of the dam there, and that hydroelectric renewable will almost double its capacity. That's going to produce probably about 20 some percent of our power. And we've ordered a new a combined cycle plant, which is 20% more efficient, which means that our fuel costs for natural gas is going to be a lot lower. The best renewables are geothermal and hydro. We have those resources, but it's going to take millions of dollars to develop them. I've been pushing for the geothermal for quite some time. Right now, it's just not economically feasible. If you want to power with fairy dust and unicorn farts again, go ahead and put up some windmills, but they cost hundreds of millions of dollars. They never recover their carbon cost, and they never recover their cost without huge subsidies. And they're very unreliable. A lot of examples of how they mess up grids. And we've studied them in depth, and it just don't work here, not in our resource area.
Okay, next question. Jim, we'll start with you on this one. The looming shortage of natural gas in Cook Inlet has been driving the energy conversation. What's HEA's role in responding to the gas shortage and making sure there's no disruption in service for members?
Well, there's plenty of gas. The problem is just getting it out of the ground or getting somebody who wants to get it out of the ground. Now, the natural gas pipeline, if their project moves forward as they've planned, they'll start laying pipe this fall, and first gas should flow through the line in 29. So we're only a couple years away. We've got contracts with NSTAR and some other folks that our gas is locked in to get to that point. When first gas comes down that line, we'll be getting it less than half of what we pay now for it. So we'll have a substantial reduction. Plus, at that point in time, we will have already set up our new combined cycle plant, which is going to save us 20% on our fuel cost as well. So I think we're in a great position, and it looks really good. I mean, they're going to do some sort of LNG. There's three actual opportunities right now. Or competing entities. So that could help us with the price and all that sort of thing until and if we need additional resources at that point. HEA is in a great position, and we're covered. I'm not concerned. Thank you.
Patrick, same question to you. What's HEA's role in responding to the gas shortage and making sure there's no disruption in service for members?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's important that there's a lot of interested parties when it comes to our gas sources, and the proposed options for how we get more gas in the near and long term. And I think HEA's responsibility and the responsibility of all the other utilities is to really just make sure that we are working together to get the best plan in place to ensure that there's good prices on fuel and fuel availability. I think HEA should be working with other utilities, especially some of the ones, in Anchorage and the Valley that are much larger and have a lot more buying power and sway in the market when it comes to purchases and plans. And I think that's an important part of making sure that we get good, reliable gas flow because it is important, and we will be using gas for a very long time, and I think it's important to work together on that effort.
Rate increases are probably the biggest thing HEA customers pay attention to, or at least have the strongest opinions about. What is your philosophy for balancing the cooperative's need for revenue with impact to ratepayers?
Yeah, so obviously, rate increases are difficult for every member. I don't think there's really anyone who doesn't care if the price goes up at all or not. So it's important that we focus on those and make sure that that we limit rate increases as much as possible, but it's always obviously also very hard to do, as evident by rates. So I think that a primary focus should be in rate stability and making sure that the plans that we're putting in place today ensure that rates are stable and in the future, and make sure that they aren't susceptible to, you know, outside influences as much. And so one of the ways that we can do that is through some of these more rate stable projects, like we were talking about, with other types of renewables that have fixed costs and predictable costs. And then while at the same time, making sure that, like I said, we're working with other utilities to make sure that we get the best deals on gas and we implement the best strategies for using the gas wherever it's coming from, whether it be the new natural gas pipeline or imported external gas, however that works out. We want to make sure we've got the ratepayers in mind.
Jim, what is your philosophy for balancing the cooperative's need for revenue with the impact to ratepayers?
Well, that's the reason I got on the board in the first place 6 years ago. When I got on the board, I found out that, wait a minute. This place is actually run very well. We're very cognizant of what we're doing. A lot of cost sometimes is not due to HEA's decisions, but as Patrick was talking about, the other utilities, things that they've done that were not very smart. And it's cost HEA ratepayers in the long run. During my term, we've been able to maintain rates very well. There have been a couple of ups, and there have been actually a couple reductions. Most recent reduction was at a time when I'm sure nobody noticed, which was December, January of this year. We had a slight rate reduction. But since this has been the coldest winter in the Kenai area, well, all of Alaska, of course, everybody used a whole lot more electricity to stay warm. So thank goodness we were able to reduce rates right at that critical time, because those bills, I mean, even my bill's huge. And that's our first thought whenever we're looking at any of these projects or any of these deals. What can we do to make sure that we are keeping costs as low as possible for the long term for our members and running our utility as efficiently and reliably as possible? The addition of the battery backup system, BESS, in Soldotna is a great example.
Jim, we'll start with you. What elements do you prioritize when you're considering which projects may or may not benefit HEA as a whole and also ratepayers?
We have a really large source of hydroelectric power, which has to be regulated in. And a lot of that, most of that power is transported off of the peninsula, but we pick up our 12% out of it. Whenever we're islanded, which means the line going north can't take all of that power, then we end up taking a whole lot more of it. We have to manage that along with our combined cycle plant. It runs at an optimum efficiency. And we have engineers that, man, it's unbelievable how well they manage this thing to know whether they're running as efficiently as possible or not. And whenever you start bringing in other sources, then you've got to back that thing down and it doesn't run as efficiently. So we've got to really watch bringing in a lot of other types of sources to try to manage how are we going to bring that in without disrupting the flow. It's not a detail of the board of directors to know all those intricate details, but it's a function of us to be able to communicate with the engineers and have them explain how that functions and how bringing something in is going to affect the rest of the grid and whether it's going to be efficient or not, which of course in the long run is what costs us more money or saves us money. And from what they tell us, the way we're operating right now is the most efficient. When we get the new combined cycle unit, it will become even more efficient. So putting things that are unreliable or intermittent can really affect that.
Patrick, when you think about some of the other energy projects that have been proposed, what elements do you prioritize when you're considering which projects may or may not benefit HEA as a whole and also its ratepayers?
Yeah, so I think it's important to look at the long-term effects of a project. I think projects that span multiple decades are some of the most successful projects. I think the Bradley Lake is a great example of that. It's a success story that Alaska did back in the early 90s, late 80s, that has been paying off ever since. And I think that those are the kinds of projects that bring a lot of value to members. The HEA has approved some contracts from other IPPs that didn't necessarily come to fruition, but that tells me I'm not a member of the board, so I don't have a lot of the information that you have, but that tells me that introduction of large-scale renewable energy projects that are intermittent in their energy generation are feasible and work well with our grid. Otherwise, we wouldn't have approved bringing those projects in. And so I think that that's something that we should continue to expand on, because I think it's based on the information that I have, it's already been thought out and made clear that it's a feasible solution for our ratepayers to introduce new energy options like that. And so yeah, I think that that's an important piece to keep in mind, and not to rule out those types of energy sources that could benefit ratepayers.
When you think about all the infrastructure that HEA currently owns and maintains, do you feel like it's sufficient to maintain the grid and service ratepayers?
I mean, I think HEA does a really great job. We live in Alaska. It's a huge grid, and not a lot of people compared to any other grid in the nation. HEA, I think, does a really pretty incredible job of keeping this grid operating and running. I think they do a great job of keeping parts in stock. I know I've been, at the meetings and listening to and reading about lots of issues with grid scale electrical equipment being unavailable nationwide due to other huge projects. And that seems to never really bring us down. And so I think that HEA does a great job. I think that there's always room for improvement. I don't know exactly what those projects are, but I'd be interested in looking at some of the projects. Some of the things I've thought about are, investing more in some of the proactive solutions to, preventing outages. I know we can cut down trees that are putting lines at risk, but we have to get permission from private property owners to do that, of course. But I think that it could pencil out that incentive options could help us there, where, we have, if there's private owners that are less interested in having their trees cut down, we could even provide a monetary incentive for that in some way if it pencils out. So those are kinds of things. I don't know if they would pencil out or not, but it'd be interesting to look at and find out and see if there's any other proactive approaches we can take to preventing outages. But overall, HEA does a really great job.
So, Jim, same question to you.
Well, we service an area about the size of Indiana with about 27,000 users. So it's very difficult for them, yes. Almost the only reason we have outages now are due to spruce bark beetle kill. Trees falling mostly from outside of the right of way, because we've got our right of ways clear, but our right of ways are very narrow in a lot of places. And those trees, when they fall over, they knock the lines out. And a lot of people just will not allow you to do that. Now, if the big concern, and I've gone to the legislature the last 2 years with HEA as a representative, and some of the stuff we were lobbying for is being able to try to limit our liability if trees fall over onto the lines from out of the right of way and start a big fire. Who's responsible, right? Well, everybody wants to go after the ones with the big pockets, not the property owner, but come after the utility. Well, it's not the utility's fault. We tried to get the stuff cut. So if you're dealing with national forest or state lands and something like that happens, they just call it an act of God. But if you're dealing with private property owners, no, somebody's liable. So we've been trying to get the legislature to work out some wording to where that's not the case, and where we can work with property owners to try to minimize those issues.
Jim, it's your turn to start on this one. What are some of the big issues you're expecting to come across the board's desk in the next 3 years?
There's only a few. Natural gas, for one, to power the thing. Deliverability of parts, it's improved on transformers and that sort of thing. During my term, we've released, or we've given back to, paid back to members, the largest record numbers of capital credits. So that shows where we've been operating for the years, and now we've been able to make enough little extra there that we can send that back to people, and most of them get it as a reduction of their bill. The big things are just what we've been talking about, reliability of natural gas coming in. Is the legislature going to finish approving so we can go to work on the Dixon diversion and increase the capacity of Bradley Lake? I mean, that'll be massive. We've got a couple of projects, of course, I can't talk about because of NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, but Project X is a hydro project that could power almost the whole grid itself as well, just like Augustine Volcano, the geothermal. Those are things that I think will come up during the next 3 years. Of course, they're not feasible within the next 3 years, but those will come up. And the pipeline from the North Slope is the most important. We need that, and we need to really push hard for it.
Okay, Patrick, same question to you. What are some of the big issues you're expecting to come across the board's desk in the next 3 years?
Yeah, so I mean, I think Jim covered them pretty explicitly. The natural gas is the top of mind to pretty much anyone you talk about HEA with. Natural gas resources, natural gas delivery, and the cost of the gas. I think those are the biggest things that are going to affect the utility that the board is going to need to be really focused heavily on and making sure that we are managing efficiently. In addition to that, some of the other things that we've talked about with grid diversification, I think, are going to be coming across, whether it's these hydro projects that you're talking about, Jim, or other projects. I think that there are projects that need to be implemented, and those are going to be coming across the board's desk to be looked at and scrutinized and criticized and gone through with a fine-tooth comb. So I think those are the big things that are being focused on. But I also think that there's some other less flashy and less exciting things like transparency and getting some information to members. I know I've been out talking to lots of people about these subjects, and it's really pretty apparent that most ratepayers don't know what's going on in these projects and don't know what's happening in the future. They just know that there's problems that need to be dealt with. And so I think that that's an issue that should be spending more time on the board's desk as well.
All right. Well, we have made it to closing statements. So, Patrick, why don't you go first on that?
Yeah, so basically in the end, like I said before, I've been here for my whole life, and I've been a member of this community, and I really think it's a great place. And one of the things that really resonates with me as an Alaskan is independence, and that extends to our energy. I think that that's some kind of a core value for me, at least, is being able to. In the past, we've always been able to generate our energy here, whether it's natural gas and hydro that we've been doing from Bradley Lake, and I'd like to see that continue with local energy generation through some of these newer technologies that, rather than leaning on external energy sources so much. And so that's something that I'm excited about. And like I said, I've been in the energy industry, and now I'm in the software engine industry with data and data analytics. And that's something that I think is a unique perspective. And I think I'd bring a lot of value to the board with that perspective. And so yeah, and lastly, I think both of us will agree that don't forget to vote. It's online this year. You won't get a packet in the mail. Unless you want one, you have to request it. And it starts on Friday, but keep an eye out for that email in your inbox about HEA elections, because it's important.
All right, thank you. So, Jim, 90 seconds to you, closing statements.
Okay, thank you. Well, I would like to finish the work that I've started and serve one more term. I'd have to say my opponent is an intelligent young man, but I think he still has a lot of learning to do. I am very concerned that he's supported by Cook Inlet Keeper, and I know a lot of the listeners to this program do support Cook Inlet Keeper. But I'm very concerned when, their website says they want no more oil and gas development in the inlet. And the members that we have on the board that are Cook Inlet Keeper people constantly try to reiterate that fact. And I think that by using a George Soros funded group, it is not a good thing for a board member to have because they are pushing for things that are not well thought out or studied. And it's more of trying to get there just to do it rather than what it's going to do to the grid. I would like to have everyone's vote, and I wish Patrick the best in the future. I hope he'll continue to study a little bit more on it, and I would like to have people's vote for a third term. So thank you.
That was incumbent Jim Duffield and challenger Patrick Parker for the District 1 seat on the Homer Electric Association Board of Directors. This is the Kenai Conversation on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. Up next, KDLL's Ashlyn O'Hara speaks with the candidates for District 2.
Incumbent Dan Green and challenger Mitch Michaud. District 2 covers Soldotna, Sterling, and parts of Kasilof. Dan, Mitch, thank you both for being here. Tell us a little bit about yourselves and why you're running for the HEA board. And Dan, we'll start with you. You'll have 90 seconds.
Just a brief introduction to who I am. I was born and raised in Alaska, in Anchorage, Alaska, and moved to the peninsula in 1974 and started a construction company called G&S Construction. And that company has provided us with our ability to make a living, and we've done mostly public projects, school, fire stations, sewer plants, medical facilities, and have certainly enjoyed our time here. And this would be my second term if I was reelected to the board. I certainly have learned a lot in my first 3 years, and believe that we have a good, solid board that makes good, rational decisions. And being a businessman for nearly 50 years, I feel like it's important to think about what you're doing and use a rational thought process to be sure that we make good, sound decisions for our members. And I'll sum it up by saying the most important thing to me is our members and competitive rates and a realistic approach to management of HEA.
Perfect. Mitch, we'll go to you now.
My name is Mitch Michaud, and I live in Ridgeway, actually. I'm just about a couple of hundred feet outside of Soldotna, so don't hold that against me. Mm-hmm. I grew up in northern Maine, came from a mill town, a big labor contingent in my family. My dad was a labor leader, and I even worked in that mill for a number of years, helped me put me through college. I studied forestry, forest management, utilization, the whole process of making stuff out of woods. And then years ago, we had an economic recession in the 80s, and I went back to school and got a degree in process tech, of all things. Not that I'm a slope operator, but I worked in paper mills. We moved here in 1998. I'm running for HEA because I'm community-minded. I belong to a lot of organizations. Oh, by disclosure, I'm a member. I'm on the board of KDLL.
Thank you.
I've worked for a number of other nonprofits, worked for the Kenai Watershed Forum, and just left for a meeting with the Soil and Water Conservation District before I came here. I'm looking to bring different opinions to the board. The board has done a great job, but I think they need to be thinking a little bit further ahead. I'm a forester. When I plant trees, I'm looking at about 100 years, 150 years, and I think for utilities, we need to be planning at that level, at nearly the 100-year level.
All right. I think a lot of folks, when they think of HEA, they think of their utility bill. But as you both have mentioned, the board of directors makes a lot of important decisions, and I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about some of those decisions and what exactly the board does, what you view as your role as a board of director or a potential board of director. And Dan, we'll go back to you.
Well, I think it's important to remember that the board is an oversight board. Management and employees take care of the day-to-day operations, and the board basically sets policy for the current time and into the future. And probably one of the discussions that occur at the board have to do with the long-term viability of HEA and our ability to provide as competitive a rate and quality service and be able to manage outages appropriately and deal with mitigation of threats to our lines, such as our beetle kill forests, which is significant. It So I think the board has been very active and takes a, I'm going to call it a conservative approach. And we're concerned about the future ability of the utility to produce power at a reasonable rate. Renewables are always a discussion at nearly every meeting, and our strategic plan occurs every 3 years, and we do our best to try to comply with that plan at the time. So lots of things happen every meeting. So
Mitch, same question.
One of the roles of the board of any organization, being a nonprofit or a public utility, is, as Dan said, is for providing guidance and planning in the future. Operations, we typically don't deal with employment issues. We don't deal with development of projects, but we provide guidance. And essentially, we only have one employee that we oversee, and that would be Brad Jarofsky. And that's important because we need to be representing the community as a whole. We don't represent or push for any one particular type of user, if you're a renter or if you're a large industrial user. Essentially, all members have almost like a fair and equal share in what goes on. And they are all impacted by the utility rates. Of course, everybody wants a lower power bill. But in life, you know, nothing is free. You may get something that you think is free or a low charge, but essentially somebody pays for it. And I think my time in the board will be looking at equity and fairness for all of our co-op members.
Well, so talking about that long-term vision and sustainability of the utility, how do you think HEA's board is doing right now? Do you think, you know, we're on the right track? And Dan, we'll go back to you. Obviously, you're on the board. How do you feel about where you guys are at right now?
I feel pretty doggone good about where the utility is. I think clearly that natural gas is at the top of the heap is for concern. We have very little control of that, the truth of the matter is. There's basically one significant producer in the Cook Inlet, and that's Hillcorp, of course, and they're doing what they can, I believe, and their intent is to additional exploration and a redo of wells and some additional drilling that hopefully will occur. Smaller producers that have had a difficult time, I honestly believe, because of state regulation and changes in policy. And, of course, we're always looking for other alternative sources of power production. And that's where the renewables come in. And this board has been diligently trying to find a reasonable approach to the renewable thing. And there's been projects like the Grant Lake Dam, for example, that started 10-plus years ago just trying to get permitting to do that project. And by the time they finally get permitting, the cost is to a point that 5 megawatts production makes it unrealistic. So there's some challenges there for sure, but it's important to the board to deal with where our power is going to come from in the future.
Mm-hmm. Mitch, same question. How's HEA doing right now?
They're not bad. I mean, it's really hard because when you work for an entity like HEA, of course, nobody ever just throws roses at you. You know, there's always some complaints. It's always about cost. But one of the things I think HEA is missing out on is, well, I'll just go back to what the public sentiment is that, you know, over 60, maybe two-thirds of the folks that live in Alaska see that renewables and alternative energy is in the future. And you see this even with the current administration, even though it's really not as you wouldn't think it's really pro-development of these new resources, those are moving ahead continually. I mean, Alaska is probably much further behind than many other states in adopting renewables. I have family that lives in Michigan, that live in Maine on the coast, and they have been moving that way for a number of years. And I think HEA has missed out a couple of things, and I don't think they're missteps, but I think it's over-caution, and I think everything's going to cost more next year, and that's what I tell folks. If you want to think about putting solar panels, the best time to put solar panels was 5 years ago because, you know, next year it's going to cost more.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's talk about renewables. The HEA board has kind of gone back and forth about what the extent to which a renewables target should be included in a concrete plan. And Dan, I'm wondering, you know, how big of a role should renewables be playing when you think about the long-term sustainability of the utility?
I'm a believer in, and this is probably driven a lot by my experience in business for the last 50 years, is that it's important that all these particular renewable projects are looked at realistically. And I think the board made good sound decisions in the Puppy Lake project, and unfortunately, for reasons beyond this board's control, that hasn't or did not happen. And the board had no cause or created any issues that caused that to happen. That was by the Puppy Lake group. So things like tidal, wind, I mean, there's been studies done all over the peninsula on wind. That information is becoming more available, and it's studied and reviewed by the board at times. And so far, there's not been any specific wind projects that are ready to go to work. So wind and tidal issues, that's just not ready. I mean, you just have to be realistic about that. It's not yet an option in this area. It's been looked at by numerous people, and geothermal, of course, I think probably has a realistic opportunity, but the downside of that is it's a lot of miles away, and you have to cross that inlet, and there has to be transmission lines available.
Mitch, same question.
One of the things really important to know is that we're always going to have natural gas or some fossil fuel involved with our power supply. We have this thing called winter. It gets cold and it gets dark. And whatever you do, you can't just depend on solar. I'm a solar provider, by the way. I do sell electrical power to HEA. I'm really glad I got a 1 cent increase in what they're purchasing it from me. And that's probably about the most realistic type of alternative that we can be using now. One of the things that HEA has done really well is looking at this net metering, which allows me to produce some and then in excess at the end of the month. And currently we have this net metering over a year. And I won't get into a debate with Dan about that. I'm not that comfortable with that because at some point in time you have to decide what is HEA's role in net metering. And I think the best thing that we can all do is move into it at an honest pace, and eventually we will figure out what's the best thing we can do. And by the way, I've toyed with the wind power thing and just doesn't really work out well. I'm sorry. Sorry, folks who are out there being turbine driven.
Well, and of course, something that has been driving the energy conversation a lot in recent years is this looming shortage of how much natural gas is available out of Cook Inlet. What's HEA's role in responding to that and making sure that there's no disruption in service for members?
I think, unfortunately, because of all kinds of different reasons, that the drilling opportunities and the exploration in the inlet has been limited. And without question, there's a potential shortage, and there's been a lot of the utilities, for example, NSTAR and has put in storage facilities and things like that to carry us through tough times like we've had this winter. But we're going to be importing gas. I'm confident that's going to happen. And there's three different groups now that have shown an interest in doing that. In fact, we had one before the board here a couple of weeks ago, or at least our last board meeting. And that, honestly, to me, was probably one of the most realistic approaches to solving that problem. And, of course, we're all hopeful that one day the gas line will actually become a reality. And if that happens, we have a pretty significant supply of natural gas available to the utility. But I think in the interim, the gas will be available to us, and the pricing is going to be the stumbling block in that process. But we have to have it. There's just no other alternative at this point to produce our power. So, of course, we do have Bradley Lake, and it's producing 10 to 12% of our power, which is an awesome renewable in my mind. So,
the issue of natural gas, like I said earlier, is that, you know, we will always have that in our future. But for the past 25 years, it's been known that, you know, the term big oil, I don't think that's a good term, it's big gas. It's really not big, it's availability. And there will always be gas available. It's just how much is it going to cost to get it out or get it delivered to us. Pipelines are great. I think there will be a pipeline eventually, but the question is always going to be the cost. We have a large LNG facility down in British Columbia. They've got two operating gas lines now, and they're liquefying gas, and they're sending that to the Pac Rim and possibly to California soon. And they're putting in a third pipeline. And I think that by the time we get our gas here, we're going to find out that world competition is going to just, because we're not going to be the only ones buying gas. So we're going to find out we might be on the short end of the stick when it comes to the economies of scale and the supply and demand curves. So I think the old term, independent power that HEA had many years is, I think we need to be energy independent and be less relying on outside sources.
You know, rate increases are probably the biggest thing that HEA customers pay attention to. What is your philosophy for balancing the cooperative's need for revenue with, like, the impact to ratepayers?
Well, unfortunately, we all know what inflation is, and with inflation, without question, has been significant when it comes to transformers and other supplies and wire and things like that. And we're not talking small percentages, we're talking big percentages and increases in those costs. And with inflation, when it's real, it affects labor, and all of those are things that drive up costs for the ratepayer. But I can tell you that I'm probably as strong-minded as anybody on that board about ratepayer costs. And what we do to ensure that we keep those costs as reasonable as possible. And it's just unfortunate, because of things that are out of HEA's control, costs have increased, clearly. So we're not miracle workers in that regard, and we have to be diligent about our negotiations with the union and fairness in the process, and it's all important towards maintaining reasonable rates.
Mitch. Right. Yes, inflation is a factor. We all plan at 2 or 3% inflation. I just checked it the other day before I came in here, knowing I was going to come in here, that we did have a 10% increase. And you look at it, and the kilowatt rate went up, but you look at all the other associated rates. What I've heard on the street is reading the HEA bill is like reading your phone bill now. You look at it, and you're trying to figure out, what is this SOP thing, or whatever that number is. The hard part is, for most of our members, they're the last in line. They cannot sit there and say, well, I'm going to charge my kids a little more rent because, you know, I'm just like a larger business. We can always take the higher electrical rates and costs and transfer it on to the consumer. But it ends at the consumer level. You know, that individual pays that price. Something that's missing often is conservation, because the best energy to save is the energy you don't use. And I think HEA could probably, there's a lot of programs out there where you can actually encourage people to use less power. I mean, that's the secret to saving money is don't spend it. And I think HEA could move, and there's a lot, they used to do it. They do have some rates for purchasing alternative energy or energy-saving appliances.
Dan, you mentioned the Puppy Dog Solar Lake project a few times, which I think folks who are listening will remember that as the proposed solar farm out in Nikiski that is kind of stalled right now. But when you think about some of these other projects that are being proposed, which specifications or elements do you prioritize when you're considering which projects may or may not benefit HEA as a whole, but also ratepayers?
I don't think the board gets down to that level when you talk about projects, line extensions and service hookups, and we're not at that level. We do understand and are informed about increasing costs associated with those, but the Puppy Dog Lake project was different. The board had a lot of input into that in a long, extended negotiation. And unfortunately, it didn't happen, as we all hoped it would. And the one that's being somewhat proposed at this time, it's in the real early stages. And that particular group There was discussions with HEA, and those have ceased at their choice. And here again, as far as other renewable projects, we have some information provided to us, but the way that I look at it as an individual is I want it to be for real, and I want it to be a benefit to our ratepayers. I don't want them to pay more just because we want renewables. Significant increases in costs make people unhappy, and we probably hear more complaints about that. Some are founded, some aren't. You know, it's been a cold winter, and the usage has been way up. So those are things that I care about, and I believe the board cares about. So,
Mitch, same question.
One of the things that I will advocate for once I get on the board is looking for HEA to be a stakeholder in that power production. What we're asking is what we're proposing is we're going to be buying it from a third party. And I think HEA does own a lot of assets. It owns a share in Bradley Lake, Grant Lake. Someday will actually go off the ground. They have their own generation associated with diesel. And I think HEA, to be a real significant force in alternative energy, would be becoming a shareholder in some of these projects. Because, you know, you've got to carry that note. It gives HEA some leverage if they're a part owner in that, because now they're truly invested and they're going to just try to make that work just that much more.
When you think about the status of all of the infrastructure that HEA currently owns and maintains, do you feel like it's sufficient to maintain the grid and service ratepayers?
You have to realize that HEA has a lot of miles of lines that they have to take care of, and they have easements, and a lot of the easements simply aren't big enough for trees that are 100 foot tall, and we certainly have no lack of spruce bark beetle dead trees. And HEA does literally everything that they can in their own right of way to prevent trees from falling over and shorting out the lines and causing outages. That's our number one problem. And they even go as far as any time there's an individual owner of property that has trees that are a potential threat to our lines, they're happy to cut them down. But they have to be really careful how that happens, because there's been situations where they've had a report that there's a tree leaning and I own the property, but in the reality they don't own the property. Mm. The individuals didn't own it. So that creates some heartburn and problems at times. So there is no final solution on spruce bark beetle trees falling over because our right-of-ways aren't wide enough to prevent it. So we do the best we can, and I think our crews do a pretty doggone good job of responding as quickly as possible.
Mitch, same question.
I had the fortunate time in my life where I worked with U.S. Forest Service, and we were happened to be a large landowner that had Chugach lines and some of the larger transmission lines. So we dealt with that. And one of the things when I was talking to these private landowners that were adjoining to the Forest Service lands is that I always pitch to them is that, you know, this is your power line. This is your utility. You are a member of this. You have a responsibility for that transmission, because you are an owner as well as a person who is allowing that easement to go through. And I think that's where people lose out and they don't really understand, or they've forgotten that HEA is a cooperative of members. And yes, we all want our power coming on, but we all have individual responsibilities. Yeah, people are pretty irresponsible with chainsaws too, by the way, sometimes. And there's a lot of accidents that occur. But like my dad said, there is no such thing as an accident. If you weren't doing it, it wouldn't have happened.
When you think about the next year, the next 3 years of HEA, what are some of the big issues that you are expecting or is going to come across the board's desk?
Well, number one will be how we're going to produce power. That's number one. Number two, and this is one of the issues that I frankly find to be a bit of an irritant, it's more than an irritant, as a matter of fact. In fact, Mitch was talking about all the different things that are on your bill, and the last two items are the result of our state legislators passing legislation that affects us specifically. and it's costing us money. There are several bills currently being debated, and the attorneys are getting rich talking about it. And the rail belt alone here on one particular bill, the estimate they spent over $10 million just debating the bill, the specifics of it. So there's other renewable legislation that has merit, but when you look at the goals that were set, I mean, they're just simply not something that we can do in the short term by any stretch. And so there's a possibility of the of interference, I call it, from our legislators that cost us a lot of money at times, and we just simply have to deal with it the best we can. So,
Mitch?
Dan Priory's right. I just gave him the number one sign when you talked about producing energy for the next 3 years. There's very few things that you can do to bring in alternatives that will take less than three. Solar's pretty quick, but just about anything else is 5 years away, maybe 10. So we have to be realistic. We've got to prepare for tomorrow. The legislative thing is rather interesting because a lot of it is reacting to public pressure. And like you said, it's kind of lost. And I think one of the things comes up is that we have too many people that really want something for nothing. And I think we've become a state of entitlement in some ways. And I think the true Alaska spirit has kind of waned a bit. And but you hear about it constantly. One of the things that's going to happen in the next 3 years is we're going to find people are going to find out that they can live off grid. And with the latest technology, with solar panels, some diesel generators, and some batteries, the number of consumers we're going to have is going to drop. And every time you lose a consumer, a co-op member, that actually makes the rates rise for everybody else. So I really want to see more people staying on the grid, putting on those line extensions, and we need to be re-looking at those. How do we cost out those line extensions? I did two of them. I know how expensive they are. You know, some of those I probably wouldn't do today.
And we'll go ahead and move into closing statements. It's anything you want to talk about. You've got 90 seconds, Dan.
Okay, well, I'm excited for the opportunity to represent District 2 again, and I'm hope that I get support from our specific area and can win your vote. Probably one of the most important messages that I would like to send members and all across the utility is I'm an advocate for the ratepayer. I diligently pay attention to issues that I think are going to affect cost and ultimately what the ratepayer pays in the end. And I'm talking about the individual homes and people that have to go to work every day and pay their utility bills. Utilities, electrical power is something that's required in life nowadays, and we have nearly 30,000 members that depend on HEA to keep our rates competitive, and I can promise the voters in District 2 and across the entire utility that it's priority to me to pay attention to what's important to them, and that's cost and reliability of their electrical source. So I look forward to the election, and I hope I can prevail and continue to provide oversight at the ratepayers with the ratepayer in mind.
Mitch, 90 seconds.
Like Dan says, I will be a representative of the co-op members. And one of the things that I hope to accomplish in the next 3 years is that I would have a very well-informed electorate. A lot of people don't understand electricity. They don't understand the comings and goings of it. And for that, we deal with a lot of misinformation. We've had a couple of board members on HEA that did a great job. The young lady that's down from Seldovia, she's done a wonderful job educating her members in that area as to what is going on. It's not rocket science, even though you might think it is. It's because we've had electricity since 1825 or something, when Edison started his own electrical co-op, by the way. He actually had co-op members to buy into his first grid, which is hilarious. But it's not. It's really, really, really American. And I think that's what I'm going to leave. When I leave the time that I've served, the board and the public will be much better informed and educated on the ins and outs of an electrical cooperative.
That'll be all for this week's episode of the Kenai Conversation. Thank you again to all of the HEA Board of Directors candidates for joining us. As a reminder, voting for the HEA Board candidates closes in May. Cooperative members can vote online, via paper ballot, or in person at HEA's annual meeting. You can hear the Kenai Conversation every week on Wednesdays at 10 a.m. and Saturdays at 5 p.m. here on KDLL. You can also find it on our website at kdll.org. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Thanks for listening.